Thanks very much. Now, my name is Oliver David. I'm one of the clinical nurse managers in the Mental Health of ID service. And myself and Johnny just have a few minutes of your time here today, because we just, I suppose our presentation is going to be a little bit different to everyone else's. We're not experts in dementia. Our main speciality is intellectual disability and how people with mental health, or how they encounter mental health in their lives. But we do often find people with dementia come and been referred to our services. And we just want to give you a background of what our service is about. Johnny will give you a little bit of an idea around some of the diagnostic stuff and how we're sort of trying to integrate ourselves with the local intellectual disability service who have a CNS in dementia currently in Sligo. So as I said, I'm part of the MHID service, which is the Mental Health of Intellectual Disability Service. We were established in 2014. We were established under Vision for Change, which was the strategic document outlining mental health services in Ireland, where they came from. And we currently have a consultant psychiatrist, Dr. Rauf, his registrar, 2 CM2s, so myself and another girl, Ray Sheridan, is the nurses on the team. We have a social worker, Therese Tierney, who's here today. And Johnny is our senior psychologist. And we have administrative support. We're also looking at hoping to get an OT as well for the team. And we have sort of, over the last 4 years, we've identified that speech and language is going to be very important for our service as well, even though in Vision for Change it hadn't been identified. And we sort of see that more so to help the mental health services help the service users we deal with, because the ID services are very good at communicating with the people they care for, but often the mental health service finds that more difficult. They're not used to it, I suppose, in reality. Our eligibility criteria is we ask for people to be over 18. We sort of usually say 65, but if the person is already with the ID services or with ourselves, it doesn't make that much sense to sort of transfer them onto another service once they turn 65. So often we have people over the age of 65, well, some people into their 90s. The person themselves must have an identified intellectual disability. Vision for Change tells us that they need to have moderate, severe, or profound intellectual disability. Those with a more mild intellectual disability should go through the generic services. So the generic services being their GP or their regular adult mental health services if they need to be seen by mental health. Another element to our eligibility criteria is the person must have a significant concern regarding their mental health. So we're looking at depression, bipolar affective disorder, schizophrenia, some people have conversion disorders. And we often get people referred through wondering, is this depression or is it dementia? And sometimes that's where we're involved in that process of figuring out, is this a mental health issue? Is the person feeling low down in themselves? Or is it something more like dementia? And that's often where we're asked to get involved. We look at our catchment area. We're for Sligo, Leitrim, West Cavan, South Donegal. So we sort of cover 2, 3, 4 counties. And that's we have currently 300 people on our caseload. We're sort of slowly reducing that. The Vision for Change would sort of say we should work roughly with about 50 to 100 people intensively. But it's legacy issues. I suppose we had our consultant came from the ID service and he brought with him about 385 service users. So now we're sort of down to about 300 service users. And hopefully by doing that, by reducing the numbers, we'll be able to provide more intensive support to them. People with ID and dementia, firstly, I think everyone recognises that everyone throughout Ireland has an increased life expectancy, and that's no different for the service users with intellectual disability. This is probably as a result of improved healthcare, improved medications, social activity, exercise, just a general healthier lifestyle for us all. There are now more elderly people with ID than, say, about 30 years ago. And I said, just for today, I just double-checked what that meant. And in 1974, 29% of people with intellectual disability, 25% of people didn't live past the age of 35. With an intellectual disability, but now that's over 50%. And they have found that if a person with an ID lives into their 30s, there's a good chance that they're going to go on to live into the 60s, 70s, 80s. But previously, you can imagine how in 1974, only 29% of those people survived. People with Down syndrome, and probably most of you here would be aware of, have an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. And the National Institute on Aging in the US sort of said that any person with Down syndrome will have a 50% chance of developing Alzheimer's at some point in their life. And this has implications for the person with ID. Of course, they're going to live with a lifelong illness. It has implications on their families and carers, because a lot, as we're moving away from more residential type care and settings for the people with intellectual disability, it's been put back very much like the general population onto families and carers. And a lot of our service users, the parents would be caring for them. And that's where the difficulty lies, that the parents themselves are old and we have someone now in the house that's suffering from dementia. The epidemiology, 20% of people with ID over the 65 years of age will meet the criteria for dementia. And the level of ID and prevalence of dementia is not related significantly to the degree. So really what that means is that if you have mild, moderate, severe, profound intellectual disability, it doesn't really matter. Dementia will affect you no matter what level of functioning you have. And people with Down syndrome and dementia, the Alzheimer's type, the risk of developing Alzheimer's is higher, though not all people are affected. And I was just looking at this again. By 40 years of age, almost all people with Down syndrome will have amyloid plaques of some description. But there's a lot of research currently been done to figure out why not everyone presents with dementia when they get into their older age. And that's one of the areas that a lot of research has been done with at the moment with dementia and Down syndrome. This slide, I sort of show things, probably shows it better than I'll ever say it, is that if you look there in that black line, that's the general population and how the prevalence of dementia happens with the general population. The broken line then is those people with generic intellectual disability. And the third line, the dotted line then, is those people with Down syndrome, how dementia affects them. And you can see that there's a significant change there. And most people with Down syndrome will be diagnosed in their 50s. About a quarter of those will be diagnosed before the 50 years of age, and a quarter of them after they're 60. Survival rates are similar to that of the general population. I was just looking at maybe 1 or 2 years sooner than the general population people will pass away, but in general they found that it's similar. And those with a generalized ID or intellectual disability, you can see they're much closer to the regular population. And those with a generalized ID will have the full range of causes for dementia, the same as everyone else. It's not just specific to Alzheimer's type, whereas with Down syndrome, it's much more prevalent. That's what I have to say. John is just going to go on and talk a little bit now. Thanks. Sorry, John.
Thank you. I'll tell you a certain amount about dementia and intellectual disability and about difficulties in diagnosing dementia in intellectual disability and about assessment issues and a certain amount about local service arrangements. So dementia is a disorder which new cognitive and functional impairments arise. And the next line is the important part, disentangling them from the background of that person's developmental disability may not always be easy, which makes sense, I think. But straight away you'll see words like developmental disability, is that different than intellectual disability? The area of intellectual disability, or ID, we're an MHID team, we commonly call it ID. It can be a tricky area for people to understand what it means and what ID means. Commonly accepted definition of ID is a significant lessening in intellectual functioning, a significant lessening in adaptive functioning, and arising before the age of 18 or around the age of 18 or earlier. This slide also says that when dementia is suspected, a history is taken from that person when possible, and also from an informant who has known that person some months or longer. This can be trickier as well in some people with an intellectual disability as well, because they may not live at home, they may live in a group home, In the past may have lived in a setting such as Clonamahan. There's a smaller number of people there now. Some people in Clonamahan would have lived in St. Columba's here until the early 90s or late 80s. So some of those people, the informant would have been a member of staff, nursing staff or care staff, and perhaps not a family member. The diagnostic criteria for people with intellectual disability are essentially the same as for the typically developing population. But there is a caveat that there needs to be more care in applying the criteria and relating them to the baseline functioning, intellectual and adaptive functioning of the person. As Ollie mentioned as well, the team that we work on stems from Vision for Change in 2006, and the teams nationally in MHID are relatively new, 3 or 4 years old. They're also relatively small, usually about consisting of 6 or 7 people. The national position would generally say that it's difficult to envisage these teams being able to offer a dementia assessment service for all people, but it's more likely that MHI teams can be involved in the treatment of mental illnesses associated with dementia, such as mood disorders. Show you the next slide. Just regarding difficulties in diagnosing dementia in intellectual disability, the first point is that information on baseline functioning may not always be available for a variety of reasons. People with ID tend to have been assessed a number of times over their lives, commonly by psychologists, commonly by nursing staff, other staff, depending on the setting. But the availability of those measures when a person is 40 or 50 or 35, they may not always be readily available. A person with an ID may be less able to give a history describing changes or have that ability to describe their own mental state. There are different levels of ability in intellectual disability. Not everybody's familiar with them and not everybody likes the terminology, but the commonest terminology we mild, moderate, severe, profound, and possibly some people with moderate or severe, profound intellectual disability are probably less able to describe their own thought processes at times, and that can lead to a difficulty in identifying what changes might be happening. Also, some people with ID can live in environments where they may not have the opportunity to learn or display certain skills. If you live in an institution, a large institution, you may not have the ability to boil a kettle because you never had the opportunity to boil a kettle. Or you may have the ability but not be able to display it. So staff or a person visiting may rate that as a something a person can't do. Just regarding people with Down syndrome as well, given the high risk of dementia, some services will undertake regular screening after a certain age, perhaps after age 30. And if scores on a measure decline at age 35 or 40, it can suggest that further investigation is warranted. The second part there talks about the CAMDEX, and that stands for the Cambridge Examination for Mental Disorder of Older People with Down Syndrome. It's an informed interview, so you interview a member of staff to complete this interview. And it looks at behaviour, personality, mood, and other areas. The key aspect of this instrument is that it firstly asks whether a person has a difficulty or restriction in a certain area, and secondly asks whether that difficulty is new, or whether the person has always had that difficulty. And that would be a key distinction for the assessment strategies for people with intellectual disability. For instance, a person may have difficulty using, say, a microwave, but maybe it's a skill they didn't have. It's not so much a skill that's been lost, possibly, and that would vary from person to person. The local service arrangements are that clients and families and carers benefit from the support of an assessment carried out by, there's a specialist nurse in Sligo, Leitrim, West Cavan, for people with intellectual disability who develop dementia. And some of the clients that she sees would overlap with some of the people that we work with as well. And when the possibility of dementia is raised in relation to any of these clients, we will work with her. We have consensus meetings with the dementia nurse regarding those people whenever we can. And one of the key things we will look at is the coexisting mental health concerns, for example, mood disorders. If somebody has low mood, there is occasionally a view to it that within the area of intellectual disability, that the what they call a psychological distress or psychiatric diagnosis can be missed, because people may tend to assume that if you have an intellectual disability that you won't have the full range of distress or psychiatric difficulty that the rest of the population have, and which is untrue. So a person may have a change, and it could get assumed that they have their functioning is deteriorated, that they may assume it's in the area of dementia or a loss of function, but it might be to do with depression. For some people in the area of ID as well, they have almost automatically built-in changes of residence, of staffing, of work placements, changes within group homes. And those losses and changes and occasionally bereavements can be more than the rest of us can encounter, and it's part of their situation. Just lastly, this our last slide. These slides get sent around to you afterwards. So this reference is quite good and it's accessible. If you Google it, it'll come up and it's free. And it has got two very good appendices as well about how to evaluate your service in relation to the how it accounts for people with intellectual disability, the service it gives to them. Okay, thank you.